Hey folks, it's Brad Shepard and Max Morgan back on the No One Fights Alone podcast. Max, my friend, how you doing, bro?
Doing great. What's up, everybody? How are you?
I'm doing great. It is 9 degrees in Oklahoma currently. It is, we're never supposed to be colder than Utah. What in the hell is going on?
It's a balmy 38 degrees here, so.
Hey man, I am super excited about our podcast. I know I say that. I need to find a different description, but it seems I'm always excited about our podcast, man.
Yeah, some way.
But today's was pretty freaking amazing.
I loved it. I mean, it was listening to Adam was phenomenal, man. I mean, I loved to hear his story. Loved to hear him talk about, you know, the stuff he fought through and where he's at today. It's awesome.
Redemption, recovery, and love. We talk about love throughout this. I mean, it's funny because I feel like we have this conversation pretty often when we talk about it. But and there's a lot of this coming out in the next few moments. But man, this guy, Adam Davis, is one special human being, and I have a very deep love for the guy that I'll talk about as we open up.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a good one. Yeah. I can't believe how fast the time went.
Well, for the listeners out there, I'm going to preamble it by saying theadamdavis.com if you want to look him up while you're listening to the podcast. But man, without any further wait, I just want to move us on into the conversation, because this guy is phenomenal. And so grateful for him to take time and come on and join us on a podcast.
Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. This podcast is dedicated to mental wellness for first responders and beyond. Through powerful stories, personal experiences, and expert insights, we explore the challenges and triumphs of maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Together, we remind you, no one fights alone.
Welcome back to the No One Fights Alone podcast with our guest today, Adam Davis. Adam, welcome to the podcast, man.
Man, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a long time coming. I appreciate the opportunity.
Buddy, this is awesome. It has been. Adam, you and I have known each other many years. We met even before my old life. And I have some more to tell about that, because I will love you forever, man. But for our guests, let me just say, Adam Davis, former law enforcement officer, has faced his own shit in the battles of life. Since 2015, Adam's devoted his life to delivering books that encourage first responders and presentations and training that sharpen the mind and spirit. Adam is the founder and executive director of the Live Unconquered Foundation, nonprofit organization that focuses on providing faith-based wellness resources and training for first responders and service members. And just your all-around good guy, badass. What's up, man? Well,
those intros always make me cringe a little bit. Man, it's an honor to be alive. I tell you, you know, it doesn't matter the challenges we have, because everybody's got their own. It is truly an honor to have another day where we can love again, where we could have an impact somehow, and to be sitting here talking to y'all. I'm genuinely deeply grateful for it. So thank you.
Listen, I love Adam, and before we kick off, I'm just going to tell the listeners a tidbit about you and I's friendship. We go back a ways, right? And we met long before my dark portion of my story. But we got connected. We were trying to figure out a working partnership relationship there, and then my life went south. But the reason I care so much and so deeply for this man is that he never left me. It through the course of my PTSD and alcoholism and in my recovery, in the early onset of my recovery, I was abandoned by even the work circles. I was abandoned. My closest friend, my core group, a clinical psychologist said, "We want nothing to do with you. and there was only a handful of people, and two of those dudes are sitting on here right now. Max was one of them. But Adam Davis, you never gave up on me. You never left my side. You continuously called me and said, hey, I love you. I'm cheering you on. Get healthy. Let's go back to doing some work. And I'll forever love you for that.
Man, that is that's quite possibly, other than being told I'm a good husband or good father, that's one of the greatest compliments you can get, is being told you're a good brother. Because I think in the big scheme of things, we hear these phrases, you know, hey, you know, brothers have each other's backs and blah, blah, blah. But really, the majority of the time is that's only true when things are good and when things are smooth. But, you know, the scripture tells us that brothers are born for times of adversity. A friend is a good thing at all times, but brothers are born for times of adversity. And the reality is most of the brothers abandon you when the shit hits the fan, or when you get heat deep in the flames of life, because they don't want to deal with it. They've got their own stuff. But I know what abandonment and betrayal feels like. And I've tried to focus the past several years on being a better brother. Because I remember where I was at when I was going through my stuff. And when I tell you I love you, I mean it. When I call you brother, I mean it. I'm not always perfect at it, but I know what it's like to go through hell. And nobody should have to go through it alone. You know, I know Jesus is with us through all of it, but he also put us here to be there for each other. So it's an honor to go to be there for you. And man, that means the world to me. Thank you.
Well, I just want the listeners to kind of understand, have some understanding of how much I care for you, and more than that, how appreciative I am of you as a brother and as a human being who actually can look past and say, I'm going to help you through this, which is a demonstration that we should all look at and say, I hope we can be that brave. I hope I can be that courageous. I hope I can, you know, because it was unpleasant for me, and clearly for those around me, you know, to lend a helping hand. And you never thought a second thought. There was only a handful of people, and most of them were outside the United States or outside of the state of Oklahoma. And two of those brothers are sitting here with me right now.
And well, that just goes to show you most good things are outside the state of Oklahoma.
Well, I have found quite a bit of goodness across the country, and I think I could say the same thing about my home. Yeah. I could say the same thing about where I'm at, because most people will see me and they'll be like, "That dude, he's a piece of shit, man. He is an absolute piece of garbage, and he's a garbage human being." But they know the man I used to be, and I'll tell you right now, that's who I used to be. I used to be a piece of crap. Yeah. I believe I was a great cop, but I was not a good man. And, but I think the more we look for goodness in others, the more goodness we see. It's that, you know, it's the ability to, it's like if you buy a new red Honda, guess what you're going to see a lot of after you start driving that Honda? There's a lot of red Hondas. That
Abraham Lincoln Abraham Lincoln used to say, if you look for the bad in people long enough, you'll surely find it.
Oh yeah. And you will find it. And so we can find the bad in all. And anybody we have a relationship with. But I think the beauty of relationships, when there's genuine love, is looking for the goodness in people. And I say that because I've been the beneficiary of so much grace and so much mercy, and I've been loved so well by people who didn't have to do that. And I want to pay it forward. I've been ostracized by a lot of groups because of reaching out to people who have fallen and who have had hard times or done stupid things or just dealing with pain and going through stuff, whatever it is. Jesus did that for me.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I, like, we're supposed to be followers of Jesus. Why wouldn't I do that for others?
Right.
So yeah, man, I'm jacked up to be on here with you. It's an honor to be with you, both of you. And, here's the restoration.
Well, I am super excited about our conversation. And just for our listeners, if you have any idea of Adam Davis or the familiarity of his name, you've probably seen it on some of his books. On Spiritual Combat, one of them, has been around a while. Behind the Badge is one that's been around for a while. He's got Bulletproof Marriage, and he's got Live Unconquered. Those are just Unconquered. It's just some of his books that he's got out there, and you've probably seen them. If you're listening to this podcast and you work in this wellness community, you've seen his book. I was at the FOP, the National FOP Summit, this past weekend. Of course, Colonel Grossman was there, and he was wandering around. Who was a co-author with one of your books, but your books were moving around there. And when we talked the other day, I was at a therapist's office. Remember this? We were just talking, catching up, I don't know, a week or so ago. And I said, the way, I was at a clinician's office and he had a behind the badge book sitting over there. I said, hey, man, crazy, right? You're everywhere, man.
Behind the badge. So there's roughly, 800,000 sworn peace officers in America. Behind the badge is the one that like three dozen or so publishers rejected because it was during a time where nobody wanted to take a chance on a book for law enforcement because they're afraid of it. Candy ass. And I found one publisher that said, hey, we'll do it. Well, that little book, Behind the Badge, has reached more than 100,000 law enforcement officers since May of 2018 when it launched. And so that's what, 12%, 15% nearly. I'm not good at math. About 15% of the audience that were, and my goal is to touch the heart of every cop in America.
Yeah.
You know, with a message of healing, with a message of hope that, hey, your family matters more than your career and you matter more than your career. Take care of yourself so you can have a good career. But I got an email this morning through my website. I got to share this real quick. I'm not going to reveal where he's from, his name, but it's a police officer. And he was, last week or a couple of nights ago, he was getting ready to go on his night shift and he got a message or he read the book two nights ago and he read the book and, it was, A Righteous Pursuit was the title of that entry in Behind the Badge. And there was an incident where there was a double murder, a vehicle pursuit, and ultimately a suicide. And he said, as I sat there rocking my baby after I got off, I started thinking about what that meant to me and how much your work has meant to me over the past year. And I get messages like that all the time. And it's helped men and women navigate some of the darkest situations that in reality, human beings should never have to see, witness, experience, or endure. But we do because we answer the call. And we answer the call at some point or another to face that junk head on. And what a freaking sacred honor to be able to speak into their lives. Even if it's words I wrote, 8 years ago, it still lives. And I believe that if out of all my books, I believe that'll book be the book that continues to impact lives long after my time on this planet is over. But yeah, it's an honor, man. I get messages like that all the time. And to know that it's being used and read, that's a huge compliment and I appreciate it.
Well, I know we use profanity as a second language on this podcast a lot, but
I've tried to clean mine up a little bit. I'm sorry.
Our faith is very rich and very deep.
And I've tried.
I firmly believe you are that is a testament to God working through you, my friend. And
thank you.
You know, it's just if we don't honor that, then I think the work starts to diminish. But man, let's talk a little bit about what drives you. You're a passionate dude. I was just telling Max right before, because you and Max hadn't met each other, but just telling Max, I said, man, we're going to have some fun on this because he's a passionate dude. And if we back up a little bit, tell us the backstory, however deep you want to go, what drives this before we get on to your mission, because you have a fantastic mission that you're on right now. But what drives that? What's the backstory behind Adam Davis and how you got here?
Yeah, I want to start by saying that I think the reality is we all have a sad story, and we all have parts of our story that we would rather keep hidden, because we're conditioned to live with shame and guilt. But I will tell you my story and I'll bare my soul as I have many times over the past decade for one reason, one reason only. It's because, number one, you need to understand what drives me, what powers me. And then you need to understand that you're not alone. And inevitably, it's a mathematical probability that someone will be listening to this whenever they listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they will relate to some or all of my story, and they will find the courage to deal with their pain. And that will save not only their life, but more than likely their family and the trajectory of generations to follow them. You see, when we impact one life, we don't just impact that life, we impact generations. So, because when you talk about, well, I'll go down that later, but so my story begins when I was a little boy. My mom and dad divorced when I was, you know, whatever, 5 years old, something. And I was left with an older male neighbor. Started off pretty normal. And he, it was normal in terms of, you know, I got to watch cartoons, play outside, eat trashy cereal and stuff that RFK Jr. is probably going to get rid of, but whatever. and one day it turned really dark. He put a VHS tape into a VCR sitting on top of a console TV that it would take four people to carry. And that was my first experience with pornography, as a little boy. And, it wasn't long after that, he started doing the things to me that I was watching on TV. And I remember like certain phrases he would use in certain scenes and what he'd rewind and pause and certain things he'd have me do. And I'm not going to talk about it here. But it doesn't cause me any negative emotion whenever I talk about it or think about it anymore, but it's gone through a lot of work to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for, I don't know how long it went on, but it was multiple times. And then my mom remarried. She remarried a Pentecostal preacher. So I grew up going to church all the time, you know, and so being the youngest person in a church that would hold like 75 people, naturally people start seeing things like, oh man, you're going to really do something special one day. You're going to fill stadiums and auditoriums, and you're going to do a really crazy, you're going to do really good things for God's kingdom in your life. And, you know, a lot of it was around being a preacher or pastor or something like that. And that's what I thought I was supposed to be. So I looked up to people who were in leadership in church, and, I was left with a babysitter who was, I was 15 when I was left with a babysitter who was married in her 30s with children, and she was leading the church. And so we'd leave church. I'd be dropped off at her house. She'd just been singing in the church, but she'd make me strawberry daiquiris and Bacardi, and then we'd have sex. And, man, that went on for several months. And, I was deceived. There was a lot of grooming. Looking back, there's a lot of grooming. There were other co-conspirators in that I didn't realize until about 6 years ago, thanks to some wonderfully courageous and brave and intelligent people, that helped me unravel some of that. I've dealt with a lot of guilt around that junk because, hey, I was 15 years old, you know? But it was things like, hey, you're here to be a part of God's plan for my healing, and you're helping me through a really difficult time, and you're being obedient to God, and we're going to get married and all this. And one day my eyes opened. I started going to a different church. My dad gave me a vehicle. It was a complete and utter total chick magnet. It was I think a 93 Geo Metro mint green hatchback, two-door. And
slaying them.
And so I started going to a different church. And one night on a Wednesday night, I locked my keys in my vehicle and called Dad to come help me. And he showed up and I jumped in the wrecker. He drove a wrecker. He has a body shop, has for 44 years. And I jumped in. I said, Dad, I'm in trouble. I need your help. And I talked to my dad to this day about every day. And it wasn't like that before I got into law enforcement, but, that during that time of my life, he was the only person to fight for me. And the words out of his mouth when I spilled the beans on everything that had happened were not words that I'm going to repeat here, but it was a proper response of a loving parent, a loving father. And it was violence and rage and anger to the nth degree. And then I remember the words he said. He said, I've got to protect you. And so he moved me, put me in a place where I was protected. And then he went and found everybody and sat down and had a meeting. I was, to say I was screwed up in the head would be a an understatement. Now, if I'd have told all my buddies what was going on, they'd been like, hell yeah, bro, high five, you're the man, you know, how you do this? It wasn't that way. It was my perspective of intimacy, of sex, of relationships, of trust, mm-hmm. of God, of church, of everything, communication, what it's supposed to look like. And so I was a bit demented in my perspective of things, and it took some time to heal. About 18 years old, well, 17, towards I was getting ready to turn 18. I met this beautiful blonde in a business class in high school, and we could not get enough of each other, man. We talked all the freaking time, and we got married. We graduated high school in May of 2000, got married in September 2000. So we'll be celebrating 25 years this September.
Congratulations.
And awesome. That, congrats to her, because, man, she has put up with a lot. Like, seriously. Here's my regret, guys. My regret is not marrying her at 18. My regret is like, if she knew all the crap that happened, my regret is giving her part of a man, because I was deeply wounded. And our first year, I packed my bags 52 times. And she stuck with me.
Yeah.
And she stuck with me through a lot more and a lot worse. And sure. So long story short, I've been on this journey since 2015, writing and speaking and having my own business, whatever. Before 2009, when I got in law enforcement, I had 12 different jobs. I looked for purpose and fulfillment in everything and anything and everything I could find except the right places. And then one day I found myself with two children, one on the way and a wife who couldn't work because of pregnancy complications. And I was fired, but I was a piece of crap. And I had a meeting with a pastor who said, dude, what do you want to be? You need to figure your crap out. What do you want to be? You got two kids at home and one on the way. Like, you need to grow up. What do you want to be? And I was like, you know, I've always wanted to be a youth pastor. You're such. I'm not going to say exactly what he said. He was a Marine before he was a pastor. So you can imagine it was a colorful conversation. But he challenged me, man. He called
me on my
bullcrap.
What's your second option?
He said, you're such a cop-out. And I said, you know, I grew up spending time every other weekend with my dad. And anytime I was around my dad, you know, because of the line of work he's in, he had a bunch of friends that were cops. And, man, anytime you needed those guys, they were there. They had strong families. They were good guys. And most of them, all of them are retired now. Most of them are. And I said, I've always looked up to them, and I've just never had the gonads to say, I want to be a cop. And he said, you need to grow some and go do it. And so I did. In the fall of 2009, I raised my right hand and swore in as a police officer. And I was going to church and reading my Bible and listening to Christian music. And I was like, check, check, check. I got this. This is going to be golden hour for Adam. This is going to be good. And then I woke up. And there's nothing that can prepare you for what you'll see on duty in an academy classroom or in a textbook until you actually get there and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There's nothing that can prepare you for the smell or the sounds or the sights of death, of dismemberment, of agony, of grief, of the things you'll feel when you've been raised in a church and you have to fight for your life on the ground and you're not using words like, gosh dang it, give me your doggone hands, and you feel dirty. You just mm-hmm. feel dirty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I started drinking, and there was a pivot point for me about 4 years in, I guess, where I was a negotiator, and this little boy was taken off of a school bus. Guy walked onto a bus. I wasn't like primary. I wasn't in charge. I was nothing but a scribe. And but he walked onto the bus and said, hey, I'm here to take one of these kids. And the bus driver refused. And he shot and killed the bus driver in front of a bus full of kids and grabbed the first one off and took him into an underground bunker he had been preparing and held him hostage. And that little boy was 5 years old. And I would sit there and watch the video from the, you know, drop phone that was put into the bunker for us to communicate with him. or for the primary negotiators to communicate. And it's taken me years to look back and see this, but I look back and I'm like, my brain was making a connection with that little boy as a mm-hmm. hostage and me and all the crap that I'd gone through. You know, I know that's not fair, but that's what my brain was doing. And I was having all sorts of feelings and memories and senses come back from when I was a kid. And nobody would ever know this. They, not their fault, but nobody around me. So I'd go to bed at night after, like, I don't know, 18 hours, and wake up in my side of the bed just completely drenched in sweat. So I started drinking to numb, and I was drinking heavy, drinking hard, drinking like I was in, like it was a damn Olympic sport. And one day I come home from work and I took off my gear. I'm skipping a bunch just for the sake of time here.
Sure.
But I come home from work and I took off my uniform shirt, my vest, my duty belt, and I just plopped down in the recliner and stared at the TV. And my wife was standing behind me and she said, in the sweetest voice, she turned the water off the sink in the kitchen and she said, "Hey babe, how was your day?" And she didn't know about the guy who had put a shotgun under his chin and blew his head off, or the child that was raped, or the administrative BS that you have to deal with by nature of being a cop. It took everything I had to make it home that day, like mentally and emotionally. And I know mm-hmm. a lot of people hear that and say, "Dude, you just couldn't hack it. You're weak." I'm just telling you the reality of how I felt. And she asked me, "Hey babe, how was your day?" And I responded with that one word answer that we're all guilty of using at some point or another: fine. And it wasn't the word fine. It was just how I said it. And most of the disagreements and arguments we've had over nearly 25 years have come not because of what I've said, but how I've said it or the look on my face. And that turned into an argument because I was already at my end of my fuse. And I packed my bags and I did what I do best, and that's run or hide. And I ran and hid. And I went and stayed in a portable office building. A few days later, I put my uniform on. I got in my mock patrol car. And I went and I wrote tickets for 4 hours. And when I finished, I pulled my car into the parking lot of an abandoned gas station just on the south side of town. And I backed my car in, combat parking, backed my car into the front parking spot in front of the building, and I pulled my Glock out and I stopped right here, the side of my head. I'm going to tell you a little secret. From the time I was a child to that moment, and at times moments since, I felt like I'd be better off dead. The reality is I would have been better had I never been born. And I think I'm in pretty good company, because there's some guys in the Old Testament that said the same thing I've learned since.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I felt like, now I'll admit, I think I had a bad case of a victim mentality, like nothing good ever happens to me and everything bad that can happen happens to me. And I was just, you know, that mindset. And, I paused. A culmination of decades of unresolved, unaddressed pain coming to a head in one moment. And it didn't have to be that way. But I look back and I think often what would have happened had I pulled that trigger. You know, I don't really give a damn about who would have taken my car or my gear or my position. I know that, like, this is how my mind was rolling, right? Like somebody will have to find me. And I don't want, I hate it for them. I don't want them to deal with that, but somebody will have to find me. And there'll be some people that'll be sad for a little bit, but in about 6 months, they'll box all my shit up and they'll move on. My wife will remarry. My kids will call somebody else daddy. And they may hang a plaque on the wall somewhere. They may have a Boston butt fundraiser, a t-shirt fundraiser, but I'll be forgotten and all will be well. The reality is quite different. All that church upbringing, even in the midst of all the mess that it was, something good was planted somewhere along the way. You know, we hear a lot about sowing and reaping. It's not always our actions or our money. The primary sowing is the scripture and the love that we pour into others. And somewhere along the way, somebody did it for me. And so I paused here and I yelled at God. I'm not going to yell at you, but I yelled at God and I said, I don't know if you can hear me, but if you have a plan or purpose for my life, you can have it. Otherwise, I'm out. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of struggling. I'm tired of hurting. Not a soul knew how I felt. Not a soul could have predicted it. Not a soul could have anticipated it. Because since the time I was a little boy, I learned how to mask the hardest, deepest pain that you could fathom a human being to carry. I learned how to put on a mask and put on a show. And in that very moment, I've given this talk all over the country. I've only had one group of people that said, that's bullcrap. That's embellished. That's fake, blah, blah, blah. And to those people who would think that, I will tell you directly, I do not care what you think. The proof of what happened to me in a car is the fact that I'm still here. That's the proof. And the problem is we talk about breaking a stigma and all this other stuff, and you don't have, you got people that actually go through with it and they don't want to talk about it because of people like you that say, well, that wasn't really happening or that didn't really happen. I don't give a damn. So here's what happened. I paused, I yelled at God in a very arrogant and prideful way. And I had a peace come over me unlike anything I've ever felt in my entire life. I felt a love embrace me. Like unlike anything I've up until that point, I had ever felt in my life. The closest thing you could come to it, the way I can describe it, is if you've ever seen a lake first thing in the morning when there's just a little bit of steam or fog or whatever you call it coming up off the water, but the water looks like glass. That's what it felt like inside. And the outside was like if you've ever hugged somebody that you know genuinely, genuinely loves you, you can feel it. But it was like 1,000 times more than that. It was the most perfect, perfect peace and the most perfect love you could ever fathom. And I stopped. I holstered my gun and I was just overwhelmed with emotion. And I'm so glad nobody stopped and asked me for freaking directions. And I was overwhelmed with the goodness of God. Because in the months leading to that, internally, I was interrogating God based on not his existence, but his goodness and love. If you say you're good, and this is horrible, I know it's horrible. I know how bad it sounds, and it is, but it's where I was at. This, you want truth, this is where it's at. If you're good, where were you when this happened? If you're loved, then why does this happen? Not just to me, but look at all these other people. That's where my mind was at. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, a lot of us have. In that moment, here's the answer I got. I'm the reason you survived it.
Mm. Wow.
I'm the reason you're on the other side of it. Like when I was hugging the toilet, puking my guts up from being so drunk, a little voice tapped me on the shoulder, a little still small voice said, there's nothing you can do to change my love for you. There's nothing you can do to change his love for you. And when we get past religion, when we get past all the lies that we've been taught and we unravel all the deception around it, it is the love, the perfect love of Jesus that saves humanity. It is the perfect love of Jesus that calls us to a place of healing. And in that day, I believe I had an encounter with a living God in a very special way in a patrol car, not in a church or at an altar, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is, he met me at the point of my pain. And that's what Jesus does. You can see it through the New Testament. He didn't walk up to somebody who was lame or blind or the adulterer who had 5 or 7 or however many husbands. He didn't walk up and say, you're a filthy sinner. No, he walked up and he met them at a practical point of their need. And then he ministered to their soul. That's how Jesus works. But religion has taught us, if you do this, you're going to go to hell. If you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. If you drink this, you're going to go to hell. Blah, 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 blah. All of it's lies. man, there's nothing you can do to change the love Jesus has for you. But in the same sense, like that day, I had to make some behavior changes, not because I had to, but because of the love I had just encountered, I wanted to. Like, what can I do for you? Like, how can I ever repay you? And so I went and I found my wife and I told her what happened. First thing she did, she looked up at me and she said, just come home. Just come home. And she wrapped her arms around me. And let me tell you something, brother. That's a love worth fighting for. I will climb mountains barefoot with a billy goat on my back. I will walk through hell with kerosene pants on for a woman that loves me like that and for brothers who have my back. And if you want to know what it means to be a good leader, is loving your team just like that. We often don't mention the word love in the sense of our team, but when you can see past the pain and see past the screw-ups and the people on your team, and you can love them like that and you can embrace them, and through that embrace, correction comes through love, you will have a team that will follow you no matter what. And they will go head and shoulders above the call of duty for you. That's the key to a healthy relationship no matter what. So
I have found on this side of the journey of this darkness, and I think you and I said it to each other the other day, but Max and I say it all the time. It's not a weird I love you, but I say I love you to people now more than I ever have in my life. And in singular, in groups, in family, in friends, in people I don't even know. And I had, and I'm not the, I'm just sharing experientially the encounter that I had and battle, arguably the battle I had in my 12-step program. When my life was in that dark space, God and I, God met me there and did something really you can't put words to.
It's hard to.
And I'd love to, you know, we don't have enough time to talk today about the church's influence on how I viewed or misunderstood what that was supposed to be. But we met on it. He met me and my understanding of that and receiving of that is so much different now. And now it's a genuine, it was so impactful to me. And what resonates with me is you're developing and you're moving towards this, what's driving you now, because it that point now drives me to do what I do today. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It was filled with so much grace that I can't stand on the side. It's an obligation of mine to not be on the sidelines.
I've tried to walk away, like, because there's, look, I think a lot of people feel like if you have this call of God, if you have this purpose that God has given us through pain or whatever, that it's going to be easy, and it's not easy. Like, there's resistance when you try to take light into darkness. There's going to be resistance when you take good into a naturally evil world. There's going to be resistance. And so there's been times I'm like, I'll just walk away, but I can't. Like, I go back, I stopped drinking. I started writing. That's where writing was born. I started just dumping everything that was in my mind from that shift. I just dump it out. I just drop it out. Man, I started feeling so much better. And then I felt compelled to write a book, and I wrote a book and self-published it. And that started opening up a lot of crazy cool conversations. But the point being, I had to make behavior changes. You know, I had to make some changes, but I still kept hiding pieces. You know, fears had a grip on me since I was a little boy. And I'd get in foot pursuits, you know, fights, and I'd do all the fun stuff. But when it comes to dealing with the inner man, that's the part most people don't want to ever face. You know, we don't want to deal with that because of the fear of, you know, of the pain. It doesn't matter what it is. It's a fear of how bad the marriage is, or how bad the finances are, or how bad the disease is, or the wound, whatever. Man, the bravest, most courageous act of faith you can take today is to face your dadgum fears head on and grab them by the throat, not your spouse, grab them by the throat and handle business, because you are not given a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. You are called to be courageous. You can deal with all the evil in the world you want, but if you don't deal with this stuff inside, it's going to kill you from the inside out. And so here we are. I'm driven by past pain. I'm driven by love. I'm driven by healing. And I'm driven by that love and that peace that I felt in a patrol car. I want to introduce that to every single person I can possibly get it in front of. And that's what drives me, is the love of Jesus.
And I absolutely love that. And as you're talking, I think it's so interesting. I've said this a bunch lately, is the past couple of years I've had the opportunity to travel a little bit and tell my story and different things, and listening to yours. Isn't it interesting how the things that we kept secret and hid so well for so long, mm-hmm. is what we talk about now so much. I mean, I talk about my stuff more than I probably talk about anything else, you know, and those were the secrets, the drinking, the suicidal stuff, the gun in my mouth, the everything, you know, my marriage falling apart, you know, that's the stuff I hid. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd get up and put a uniform on and go to work. I'm fine. Yep. You know, I can do the job. I'm good, you know, and just hid that stuff and buried it and buried it and buried it until, for whatever reason, now all of a sudden that's what I talk about more than anything. And it's impactful for people to hear your story. It's impactful it's time to talk about this stuff. It's time to talk. It's time for people to listen. And by us talking about it, it's okay. I think it sends the message, it's okay for other people to talk about it.
Well, yeah, look, here's why I talk about it. I've been talking about it for 10 years nearly. I talk about it because every single time I do, somebody, whether it's on a podcast, at a live event, wherever, every time somebody else comes out of the shadows. Mm-hmm.
100%.
And when I wrote Unconquered, man, it was one of the hardest books I've written. Not because of the writing is hard. It was because I was burying my soul in a permanent way. I can go into a room of strangers, share it, walk away, never have to look at them again. I can deal with that. I can muster that up and roll. But now it's forever and ever, amen, in print. And when I released that, it was kind of like, oh, let me have it back. And it was too late, until I start getting calls from guys that are like, hey man, I want to let you know something. I've been a law enforcement officer for 30 years. I've tried multiple times to end my life, and I've done a lot of horrible things. I just walked out on my back porch and accepted Jesus as my savior, and I just wanted to say thank you. Or the guy that had been doing it for 23 years and had planned his suicide. Like, they all come out of the shadows. And see, that's the thing. Like, the enemy, yeah, there's an enemy. There's an enemy, and we don't mm-hmm. fight. We don't fight against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers in high places. There's an enemy that wants you to stay isolated. He wants you to stay in the shadows of your trauma or your past painful experiences. He wants you to stay there because that's where he can destroy you, and that's where he can cause you to self-destruct or self-sabotage or whatever you want to call it. So I talk about it with passion because I know the effect it has.
Yeah. And in that state is when we doubt God and we question God and, you know, play the poor me scenario, you know, and I doubted God for a long time and because of things that had happened, you know, when we're in that deep, dark state, that's when we need God the most. That's when we're doubting him, you know,
one of the most beautiful, components of my story, and that is my misunderstanding of my connection with God and what mm-hmm. he wanted for me. You know, and we can go into, you know, whatever about the world we live in, but it was this amazing realization that God wants good things for me. And I had taken my law enforcement career and combine it with a religious overtone of rules and obligatory nods and amens mm-hmm. of you have to earn this or else. And what I found in my 12-step journey, and part of that was where, and what I want to actually circle back to something you said, is this almost this culmination of love that God had for me that I didn't know how to even receive. I didn't really even know how to own that. I thought there was a, you know, a check that box, you know, kind of thing that went along with that. But, you know, you made an interesting comment a while ago about your fears And we talk a lot on this podcast about these little tiny courageous moments of, but within myself, one of the things that I found was I was pretty big and bad, or so I thought, out on the street. But how many fears that I had that were unspoken, of fear of abandonment and betrayal and disappointment and rejection and not being loved, and how much that consumed me. And now today, taking these little moments of courage and saying, that's not true, you know, and the real courage is actually verbalizing that, you know, to your point of really releasing this and saying, and those are hard, man. Those are really, really difficult moments of saying, this is scary, you know, of, but I'm fixing the release, to your point, when it, you put it in the book and just said, hey, man, it, my shit's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is, I mean, that can be scary, but once you get to the point, you just really don't give a crap. Like once you've kind of faced your own mortality and you realize that most stuff in this life is really meaningless, even the things that we give a lot of meaning to, mm-hmm. it's all meaningless. The money, meaningless. The houses, the cars, the stuff is meaningless. Mm-hmm. Because when we're all stripped away down to our bare nakedness and there's no one with us, who are you? Who are you when you've been taken, when everything is taken away, when everybody turns their backs on you? That's when you determine what your identity is going to be. You know, Job in chapter 42, verse 10, it says, the Lord restored Job when he prayed for his friends. And yes, he gave him double what he had before. That sounds really special until you realize his friends sucked. Like his friends were trash, dude. When this dude's cows were dying and his kids were dying and his hag of a wife is like, why don't you just curse God and be better? You got all these sores all over you. His friends were like, well, Job, you're dealing with this stuff because, you know, you got sin in your life. I think we've all heard that from some Christian friends, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Or Job, mm-hmm. your kids are dead because they had sin in their life. You know, you need to, that sucks. And then the other one was like, you're not suffering enough for the bad things you've done. You need to suffer more. You know, religion tells us that we have to suffer for the sin, but Jesus said, I hung it all on the cross for you. And the absolute greatest scandal of all time, how he would love the man who is homeless and drunk as much as he would love the holiest person on the planet and love them equally so that he would give everything for both of them. And here we are stuck in the chasm of pain and healing and trauma and confusion and fear and all the things that the enemy would want us to stay dancing with. And Jesus says, come and lay it down. Come and lay it down. I use this formula when I start having these lies, because the enemy, here's how the enemy operates. He whispers these little lies into your mind. Mm-hmm. And but God's word gives us the standard by which we judge those lies. Philippians 4:8 is the standard. It says, whatever things are true, whatever things are honorable, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good, a good report, and if there's any virtue and praiseworthy, meditate on these things. If it doesn't meet that standard, then it has to be dismissed. If it's not true, cut that junk off. Cut it off immediately. Shift your attention and begin, like, literally say out loud if you got to, I reject that. Or in Christianese, I rebuke that in Jesus' name. And then you begin working on something that is true, that is lovely, that's praiseworthy. But 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. The enemy, Revelation says, I ain't gonna preach, but I could. But Revelation says, we overcome the enemy by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. He can't touch the blood of Jesus. That's an argument that stands the test of time. But he will do everything he can to discredit you, to destroy your testimony, or to silence you. The knowledge of God, knowing his character, he is always good. He is always faithful. and he has the best plans for us, better than we could ever fathom. So it doesn't matter if you're facing the worst pain in the world right now. The greatest weapon you have is to get into a place where you say, God, I forgive them. I forgive the people who hurt me. And not only do I forgive them, but I ask you to bless them in every way possible. Prosper their business endeavors. Prosper their relationships. Touch their body and give them long and healthy, prosperous lives. When you begin to pray for people with genuine hearts, and you see that that releases all of the resentment and the bitterness and the pain and the hate and the, all the grief and all this junk, God is going to begin to do something supernatural for you. Because you're shifting your heart and your attention from focusing on the pain to putting your eyes back on him, like Peter should have when he was called out of the boat and he began to sink. Just put your eyes on Jesus. That's I will unashamedly tell you, that is the sole reason. He is the sole reason I'm sitting here talking to you today. If it wasn't for Jesus, they'd have a plot with my name on it and the grass growing over me today.
I know you say you're not going to preach a sermon, but I feel like we just got a pretty good one right there.
I have a problem with that.
I fundamentally think that, and you know, for the listeners out there, maybe Adam, that maybe have a, and I'm just trying to put myself in the framework of how I used to think and some of the feedback that I've gotten from our first responders, firefighters, cops out there that say, where is God in these moments, you know, of hurt and pain. And I think that oration towards it is beautiful, is that we can give up on him, but he's not giving up on us.
That's a beautiful part.
One of the most profound lessons that I learned is that, you know, I gave up on you, but he ain't giving up on me.
He's a gentleman. He's not going to be overbearing.
Yeah.
He longs with all of his heart that we would, in our darkest moments, call on him, because he's as near as we want him to be or as far away as we want him to be. And when we understand that his word literally says, as you draw close to me, I'll draw closer to you. And so it has to be an intentional awareness and an intentional action that we take in our mind, in our thoughts, in our emotions, that yes, right now I'm just completely pissed off and I want to break people's jawbones. I want to rip flesh from limb because of what people have done to me. But you know what? I deserve that. If it wasn't for Jesus on a cross, that's what I deserve, is the worst of the worst. But he bore my judgment on a cross. And so understanding that in the darkest moments, people say, yeah, where's God? Like, he feels so far away. Maybe it's us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He's as near as we want him to be. But I'll tell you this. I don't speak to you from the platform of somebody who is, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I consider myself a high-ranking sinner that has been greatly and incredibly and miraculously redeemed by Jesus.
Same.
And it doesn't mean that I'm going to be perfect. It doesn't mean I'm going to set a great standard, although I try. I do. I try. But I'll tell you this. It doesn't matter what you're going through today. If you will pause and you will say this little phrase right here, and it's not magic, it's not a ritual, just think about it and let it come from the heart. Like, let it come from deep down. Feel it. If it pisses you off, then feel it. Sit in it, feel it, and then heal it. But sit there for a second and say, Jesus, I can't do this on my own. I don't want to do it on my own anymore. I need you. Because the truth is, if you're on an island by yourself and you got to fight, you still need to depend on him. You got to believe in something bigger than yourself. Because if all I got to believe in is me, we got a long freaking road ahead of us, Jack. We got a long road. But I'm thankful that I have a friend that's closer than a brother. He's closer than a brother.
That is so good. The greatest lesson I've learned in my 12-step recovery journey is surrender. It was difficult.
It's hard. That's hard.
But to relinquish any given situation to And we like to concentrate on the negatives, you know, the ones
that we do. Mm-hmm.
You know, the that we can't do, or it's not going our way, or it's not going right, or
it's easy to blame.
Shit. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And to surrender that in that moment, then in
fact, every
every
single pain that I have today is a result of some decision that I made or did not make. The greatest freedom that I have found, other than the greatest freedom is in Jesus, but the greatest freedom I found was looking in the mirror, owning my junk, and then looking in the mirror and saying, hey, this sounds weird, but I forgive you. I love you, man. I forgive you. You're more than what you did in the past. It doesn't matter what anybody says or what anybody does. You are immensely and immeasurably loved, and you have a purpose. And there's sometimes I'm going to use this word, and it's going to throw some people for a loop, but all it means is to speak, to encourage. But sometimes you have to prophesy to yourself with the word S, prophesy to yourself. And all it means is to encourage. That encouragement is a form of prophecy. And so sometimes you have to look in the mirror and encourage yourself. David said, learn to encourage yourself in the Lord. David said that. David was a man who was a mess, but God said he was a man after my own heart. And if you go through and read about the story of David, man, he was an emotional roller coaster. But he was a king. He was adulterer. He was murderer. He was, but he was all these things. But he was a man after God's own heart. And he said, how beautiful is that, though? Like, how beautiful is the fact that we can lay everything down at his feet? And, you know, practically, like, let's get practical. You need to, you know, I got to inject this. You got to sleep good. If you're not sleeping good, you need to get that squared away. You need to move your body. You need to communicate well with your spouse. But all that's moot point if you don't take care of this inside. You got to take care of this and take care of this. A lot of men are aligned with God here intellectually. Like, we have an intellectual acknowledgement of Scripture in his existence, but we're not sold out here. And some have it here, but not here. When you can align both the head and the heart with who he is and understand his nature and how he's called us, like Genesis 1:27, I think it's 1:27 or 1:26, God said, let us make mankind in our image or likeness. And that word likeness or image in the Hebrew, the original root word means sekel, T-S-E-K-L, which means shadow. So we're created in the shadow of God. We're created in the shadow. We're created to be his shadow. You remember when your kids were little, man, they, you were like, you turn around and they're there. If you stop, they run into you because they're right there.
I have a German Shepherd like that.
I got a stupid miniature schnauzer like that. But he's 98 years old. He's on his way out. It's cool. But we're created in the shadow of the Almighty God. Like, we're created in his image. Amazing. Like, don't you realize the power that you have?
How easy is it to forget that, though? I mean, we just push back from that.
That's what the enemy wants. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sit around and wring your hands about tomorrow and next week and next month or next year. Just focus on the good he's got in front of you.
You know, I've heard it said many times, if you talk to another human being the way you talk to yourself, you'd probably get
punch
your ass
square in the mouth.
Yeah.
Punch him square in the jaw, man.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I had a buddy last night. I was talking to him about something. And I was like, I deal with imposter syndrome. And this dude has got such an incredible story. But he was like, Adam, you're literally the only person that thinks that about yourself, which is a good thing because you can change it. You can control it. And there's not another person on the planet that thinks that about you.
Yeah.
And you need to fix that about yourself because, you know, and we just get in those ruts, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but realize the power you have. That's why I wrote Unconquered. I'm not trying to sell a book, buy it. If you don't want to buy it, it's okay. I don't care. But, I wrote it. So hopefully through my mess, you find the courage to deal with your own stuff and that it encourages you, that it empowers you, that it inspires you to take action on your problem, on your fears and find new life. John 10:10 is probably one of my very favorite verses. It says, the enemy comes to kill, steal, and destroy. But Jesus said, I have come that you might have life to the fullest. So my question to you today, whoever's listening, wherever you Are you living your life to the fullest? Is it abundant in every way? Because whatever goodness God has, he has it in abundance. And everything he has for you is good. So a lot of mindset, a lot about our mindset has to change to experience a life that is beyond defeat. And I'll give you a secret, and this is my last secret, and I'll shut up and let y'all run with it. But my last secret is the whole brand of Live Unconquered is fundamentally rooted in a relationship with Jesus. If I live with Christ, I die with Christ. And if I die today, I've planted seeds in hearts and souls and families across the world, from coast to coast in America to Germany, Australia, the United Kingdom, Switzerland, all over. I mean, I could just list them all of people I've heard from. My work is done. But until that day and I take my last breath, I'm going to tell people about the love that rescued me. And I'm going to remind them, it doesn't matter how you feel. 2 o'clock in the morning when those demons are barking and snotting and growling at your door and you feel like the end is near, there's one who's closer than a brother. Call on him. And that, my friends, means you'll never fight alone. That's what it means.
Love that.
Man, that I couldn't come up with a better close on that than that right there, Adam. Thank you for that message, that sermon.
I didn't mean it to be a sermon, bro. I really didn't mean it to be.
Nah, sharing your story, man. It's I hope it resonates with somebody on the podcast. I'd love for them to reach out to us if need be. But if they need to reach out to you, Adam, how do they get a hold of you? If they want to find a book or find a message or give you some information, how do they find Adam Davis?
Yeah, you can visit the website, theadamdavis.com, theadamdavis.com, or email me, adam@theadamdavis.com.
Adam, I love you. I'm super appreciative of you taking the time out of your day to come on here and tell your story and spread some love. And can't thank you enough, man.
Thank you so much.
Hey, honor's mine. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's first responder resiliency program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.